welcome to the House Transportation Committee. Present are Representative Salmon. Let me see if I can get this all correct.
Miller.
Representative Elkins, my co-chair. Representative Kapsner. Excuse me while I get through this. Representative Newman and Representative Thomas and Chair Gatto, or I'm sorry, Co-Chair Gatto. We have before us today committee substitute for House Bill 383. Just by way of information, it's a committee substitute. Do we need to adopt the committee substitute? Yes, we do. We have a motion that we adopt committee substitute version S. Okay, Representative Elkins has moved that we adopt committee substitute for House Bill 383 version S. Are there objections? Seeing and hearing none, we have before us committee substitute for House Bill 383. Representative Guerra is the sponsor. Representative Guerra, you have the chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. This bill solves two problems that that exist in the used car sales practice. It addresses two practices that some used car dealers engage in that others don't. And one of the problems that it addresses, the legislature thought they addressed in, I think, 2002, but Assistant Attorney General Ed Sniffen is on the phone, and he'll explain that. And then the other is one that some people in the legal community say is the law now. Some people say is not, so we want to clarify that, too. There are two practices that some used car dealers engage in that consumers believe are misleading relating to the sales price. One is they some used car dealers charge on top of the sales price. Let's say a used car is offered for $59.99 plus fees. They include in the fees this thing that they call doc. Or documentation, and many consumers believe that that's a government fee, that it's a like titling or something like that, and they just pay it. And doc is just an additional $200-$250 depending on the dealer, and it's profit. Certainly a used car dealer can charge whatever they want for a car, whatever they can negotiate for a car, but we don't want them selling. We don't want consumers to believe that they're paying a fee that's required when it's not required. So part one of the bill addresses this doc fee issue, which the legislature thought that they had solved in 2002. And it says in the negotiated or advertised price, a used car dealer, when they say the price, that price has to be inclusive of all fees except for government fees. There's titling and stuff, and then they can certainly add that onto the top. So when you advertise a car for $59.99 or you negotiate one for $59.99, it's really $59.99, not $59.99 plus, by the way, there's $250. There are a number of used car dealers that don't do that anymore, but some still do. The other issue hit the media in Anchorage this summer, and it's how we found out about it. There were a series of newspaper articles. There's something called the dealer reserve fee, which you'll go into a car dealer. The car dealer will offer to get you financing from a bank, and you'll ultimately get a contract that says we're willing to sell you this car for a certain price, and then we have a loan through, let's say, First National Bank or another bank for 5.9%. And many consumers believe that that's the rate that's being offered by the bank. But in fact, in many cases, the bank would offer a lower rate, and the dealer is keeping a portion of that percentage. So just like the first part of the bill, we don't want to tell car dealers what they can charge, but if they're keeping a portion of the fee, the consumers don't really realize that's happening, and we should inform the consumer that a portion of that fee, if it's being kept by the dealer, is being kept. And the original version of the bill was a little more stringent, and I agree with the committee chair's CS. The original version of the bill said the dealer needs to say how much money they're making, how much their cut is, but that would be difficult to calculate. So with an amendment that I think also Assistant Attorney General Sniffen can explain, that you'll see, we're just going to say the dealer should inform the consumer if it's true that they're keeping a portion. And then They don't have to say what that portion is, because that could be very difficult to calculate. And then the consumer can then say to the dealer, well, I'll either accept it or maybe I'll shop around. It's an issue of full disclosure. Both parts of this bill are about full disclosure. Neither part of this bill prevent a car dealer from charging whatever they feel they want to offer as a sales price. Both of the provisions of this bill just inform consumers that certain fees are being charged or just clarify for the consumer what the real price is that's being offered. So that's what the bill does. There was a case in Anchorage, the one that got reported. And this was on the dealer reserve issue. The consumer bought a $23,000 car. She was told in the contract that she was being offered a 5.9% loan from Denali Alaska Credit Union. As it turned out, there was evidence that Denali had offered the dealer to do the loan for 4.5%. The dealer didn't tell the consumer about that. They put in the 5.9% loan offer in the contract, and then the dealer kept essentially the difference. So the dealer kept the difference between 4.5 and 5.9. So this bill would just say, if you're keeping a portion, you just need to let the consumer know. They might not get a better deal on their own from the bank. They might. They might just say, as a matter of convenience, sure, you guys can keep a cut. I don't care. And they might sign it there. But we want to give the consumer information, because they do believe, when they see the bank's name next to the loan interest rate, that that's what the bank is charging.
I have a question for you. If indeed a dealer, and I know we're going to get a better answer here because there are several dealers online, but in your mind, if a car agency were to say, I'm offering to finance the car at 5.9% through First National Bank, then I think that's open and honest statements. But if they say First National Bank will finance the loan at 5.9%, when in effect they're only charging me 4.5 or some numbers, let's just make them up, then are you saying that that is probably not properly disclosing the information? Because I expect, if I go to a car dealer, that they're the ones offering me this interest rate. If they say, we can give you 5.5%, we can give you 5.5%, I think it's them giving it to me and not the bank giving it to me.
Mr. Chair, it's a fine distinction. First of all, I don't believe that consumers read these contracts that closely. If you have a bank's name associated with the interest rate, you know, through, from, directly from, sort of from, if you have the bank's name and the interest rate, I think the consumer thinks that's what the bank is charging. I suppose if you had, we're offering you, we Joe's Used Car Dealership are offering you a 5.9% interest rate, yeah, then the consumer knows that you're probably making some money off of it. But that's why I think it's important to say, if the dealer is getting a cut, then they need to inform the consumer, because it's really that bank circumstance. Whenever the bank name is mentioned, I think the consumer thinks it's coming from the bank, rightly or wrongly, and reasonably or unreasonably. That's just the way people think.
Representative Elkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Les, it seems to me that in all probability, in most cases, the banks have gone to the dealers and negotiated for them to finance the cars through their bank, and they have made some kind of a concession to them to do that for them. And so if you were the banker and I had been looking to buy a car from Mary, and I came told you I was going to buy a car from Mary, would you tell her would you give her a lower rate than the same rate you negotiate with me, or would you say, no, I you're going to pay 5.9 or whatever it is, because you need to protect your client?
Well, thank you, through the chair. Representative Elkins, I think what would happen is, sure, there might be some banks who the lowest interest rate they're going to offer is going to be through the dealership. But let's say you're in Anchorage and you're First National Bank, and you say to the car dealership, the lowest interest rate we're going to offer, we'll give to you, is going to be 4.5%, and you get to, you add on 1.5%, so you put on the contract, it says 6%. if you put on the contract that the dealer gets to keep a portion, then the consumers might say, well, I'm going to go call my bank. It might not be the same bank that has the contract with you. They might go to Denali Federal Credit Union. Denali will say, well, we do these things for 4.5%. We're not requiring that the consumer do anything, but we're giving the consumer a heads up that maybe they might be able to negotiate a lower rate on their own. And just a percentage can mean an extra $1,000 over the course of a loan. It's a lot of money to people who are living on the margins, and really people who buy used cars are more likely to be living on the margins than those who always buy new cars.
Representative Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe I shop wrong, but I always go to the bank first before I go shopping and find out, you know, when I went south to buy my truck and my wife's car, I called my local bank and says, how much is the interest? They said 9.5%. Well, I knew, and I says, can I finance it here if I find a vehicle? They said, call me and write a personal check and we'll do it. But more times than not, the dealers, at least I've run into, are down at 5.5% or 6.5%. And if they're taking 1% away from me, I don't care because they're saving me 3% or 4%. But I do it backwards, I guess. I go to the bank first. Because if he says, I'm not going to finance your car for you, Bill, you're a bad risk, I'm not going shopping. So I guess I just do it. I don't know if it's backwards or not, less, but it's, you should know before you go in there. Because I think it depends on the price of the vehicle, too. The interest rates go up. But, you know, I don't shop backwards, I guess. Or
through the chair, I think it's wise to do that. But you wouldn't be harmed if the contract said, here's the deal, and the dealer is keeping a cut. And you would say, well, shoot, I went to my bank. I don't care if you keep a cut. Or you might say, wow, you're keeping a cut? I want to try and negotiate another $100 off this deal. I didn't realize you were making money off of this. If you arm the consumer with full information, then they can cut the best deal they can. It's the free market. It's between the consumer and the dealer, and the more information you give people, the more fair it is to everybody. And really, by not telling this to the consumer that the dealer is keeping a cut, you're really hiding something from the consumer. And I'm not telling you that in every case the consumer will get a cheaper car if we put this disclosure in, but at least we're giving the consumer the fair information. And it might very well be, frankly, the people who get harmed the most when they buy cars in Anchorage are people from outside of Anchorage who come in. So they're not going to have cut a deal with their local bank. They might not have a local bank, or they just might figure, I'm going to Anchorage for a weekend. It's going to be one-stop shopping. I had a car dealer tell me that they love it when people from the bush come in because they're the ones that they can charge not only the full price, but they can add a markup on top of the full price too. That's why it's so important to give people full information. It doesn't harm anything to give people the information. In some cases, it'll help them, but it never hurts it.
Representative Thomas has a follow-up, and yep. Then I'll go to Representative Newman and then back to Elkins.
Before you sign your documents, every time I've been in there, again, they show you what your interest rates are, and they told me going in what they are, and I've never, and again, it's out of state. I've never bought a vehicle in Anchorage. You know, I figure if I'm going on vacation, why go to Anchorage to buy a car? I'd rather buy it either in Wisconsin or Las Vegas or someplace. Yeah, and then tour America. But, you know, again, they show you the interest rates there. And I guess I don't know how else you can be more upfront than saying, here's the interest rate. I guess, you know, and I'm from, one time it was from the bush. I guess it's rural now. Haines is 2,300 people in it. Then we have a bank, that's who I call. It's First National Bank. I think it's Anchorage. I don't know what they call themselves now. But I quit buying through them because their interest rates are so high. It's cheaper to go through a dealer than a commercial bank.
Still, if you give the consumer the information that it's an inflated interest rate, it arms them with information they can use to negotiate a better deal right there.
Representative Newman.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, through the chair, Representative Gatto, Gareth. I'm kind of just following up on what Representative Thomas said. Where, you know, you have a certain amount of credit that comes through the dealer and the disclosure there, and I'm not quite sure what where we're going at on this bill is. When you, if you're a car dealer and I come to you, and again, we'll go through a quick process here where you say you can offer me at 5%, but you're getting money through the bank at 4%. When I fill out your paperwork, do you, as a car dealer, have any fiduciary responsibility if I don't pay my bills? Do I pay it to you? Am I paying it to the bank? And if I'm paying it to the bank, don't I fill out the bank's paperwork?
Well, in the way it works right now, neither the dealer nor the bank are telling you that the dealer gets a cut. So I'm not sure whose paperwork you're filling out, but if you're filling out bank paperwork and the bank is giving, bank would offer you a 4.5% loan, but the document says you're being charged 5.9%, the bank's not going to tell you that they would have offered you a 4.5% loan the way the law is written now. So that's why I think it's important to let the consumer know that the dealer is getting a cut again.
I'm sorry. Follow-up, Representative Newman.
But with, I don't think it really, I got an answer there, but, you know, the fiduciary responsibility, you know, is that car dealer responsible for that because they gave you the loan? And I think, you know, I mean, if the car dealer gives me a loan and they can negotiate a better price from the bank because they do a lot of volume, they have a good, better credit rating for a multitude of reasons, you know, and I guess I'm like, Representative Thomas, I kind of check on that stuff. Maybe when I was 20 years old, I didn't. I learned a few things in life. But just who's responsible for the bills if I don't pay it? I mean,
through the chair, I think that's a case-by-case issue. Whoever you sign the contract with, you owe the responsibility to. But I still don't think that it's good policy to let a consumer be misled that a bank is charging a particular rate when the bank is really charging a lower rate. Why would you not want to give the consumer true information? Even if you're a wise consumer yourself and you know these things, I guarantee you there are used car dealers out there who are implying to the customer that that's the bank's rate. I mean, it's what's implied by the language in the contract, and there are some salesmen who are just not the most up and up when they deal with consumers.
Representative Guerra, I have a question. I'm a pretty firm believer in the free market. And when I go to my local supermarket to buy milk, it's always in the back of the store, and it's usually marked up a small percent. But the cookies, the candy, and the magazines are marked up 100%, and they're right at the check stand. Now, should I require the supermarket to say, there is a big markup on this stuff up front, you're better off in the back with the small markup? Under the same circumstances, they're not going to disclose their major markups to me. Is this a similar situation?
I don't think so. I mean, I think sometimes the public demands that you have more fair pricing rules when an industry has, when some members of an industry have not dealt fairly with consumers. That's why we regulate insurance rates. But we don't regulate prices at a grocery store because we as the public don't believe. We believe there's probably enough competition out there, and there's no sort of general view that grocery stores are ripping people off. Or if they're very high-priced, it's generally assumed that people know that it's a high-priced grocery store. So there's never been any real public desire to regulate the prices a grocery store charges. On the other hand, insurance companies sometimes are not always that forthright with people, so we regulate the rates insurance companies can charge. And I think there, you know, I don't want to insult anybody there. I have had friends who have been car dealers, and they've given consumers fair information. But it's undeniable that some car dealers are not truthful with customers, that many car dealers have not been truthful with customers. I'm not going to say which have, which haven't. It just is a practice we all know goes on. Mm-hmm. And so I think car dealers have earned a little bit of extra scrutiny in this area because on the doc fee issue, we know that some dealers, some 23-year-old salespeople are convincing somebody from the bush that a doc fee is a government fee when it's not and that the bank interest rate is the one that's being charged when in fact it's not. There's a level of abuse that goes on at some used car places that I think they deserve the public scrutiny.
Okay. So if I can follow up on my own question, would you suggest then that insurance companies, we would be better off rather than regulating them, simply requiring them to disclose that a better insurance rate might be available somewhere else rather than actually determining the price that they the maximum they would be allowed to charge?
I don't know what the best way to do it in insurance is. I think I would not be supportive of the government telling car dealers what they can charge and what they can't charge. I think the best way to do it is just to give the consumer full information and then let the battle of the wits happen between the consumer and the seller.
And if I'm correct, I think what you're saying is when you walk with your cart through the supermarket and all the groceries, you already know how much they cost because you looked at the prices. The last thing you would want is for the teller at the cash register to say $112 plus documentation fee, $2.50 plus tax total. Is that essentially what you're saying?
I don't know, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure if I follow that one, but yeah, I wouldn't want them adding on a doc fee at the end.
You mentioned documentation fee that the buyer was probably well unaware of. You walk through the supermarket, you're not expecting a documentation fee to make a purchase. You're not expecting one at your insurance agent, and you're not even expecting one at the DMV. But yet you're finding one at the car dealership, and you're suggesting, if I believe you, that $250 documentation fee is part of the price and shouldn't be listed, shouldn't be broken out separately because you believe it's really duplicating it. You agreed to a certain price, which has documentation fees in it, and now you're getting hit with the same thing the second time called documentation fees.
Sure, and if they want to charge the extra $250 for the car, that's fine, but just put it in the, don't say you're charging $59.99 when you're charging $6,200. Say you're charging $6,200 because that's what you're charging.
Okay, Representative Elkins?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Back to the interest, I spoke to you earlier, and did you find out, when they finance cars today, is it simple interest or is it discount interest? In the good old days, it was discount interest. And a 5% discount interest was really 9% simple. So, you know, I think that's one of the first things I'd want to know about this contract, about what you're talking about. What kind of interest do they charge in this state? For, is it simple or is it the discount interest, which I can tell you in the 60s they did. I mean, it makes a big difference. If you want to be truth in lending, you would want to tell them that this is really 9% simple, as well as your concerns.
Through the chair, Representative Elkins, I don't know the answer to that. I think I don't know. I always see it in terms of annual percentage rate, but I don't know. I don't know what the answer is to your question, and I don't know how you would address that in a contract. Even if we put in the contract this 9% rate is simple interest, I don't think anybody knows. I don't know what simple interest is, so I don't know how to address that in this bill, the issue of what kind of interest it is.
Well, we're talking about truth here, right? And I don't know today either. I don't know what, you know, the last car I bought it, I didn't finance it, so I can't tell you, But I sold cars in the 60s, and we sold discount interest. And I got ate out by the owner a lot because I sold a lot of 5% contracts, and he wanted 6. We could only go to 6 or 9% on a new car, and he wanted that. But that's 17% simple if it went to 19. But it didn't seem right to me that I was always sold more cars at 5%, and I didn't make any extra money by doing that either. At anything above 6, I got $10 for every percentage point I went up. But on the sale, but it seems to me, if we're talking about truth in lending, we need to know what kind of interest it is. Our truth in financing, you know.
Through the chair, if there was a way to be more honest to consumers by using a certain term about what kind of interest it is, I wouldn't have any objection to that being added in the bill. I have no grasp at all over that issue, though, and I don't know how to do it.
Fair enough. Representative Kapsner?
Thank you. I think not only are village people who don't have banks more vulnerable to car dealers, but I know that women are, and especially single women who come in to buy cars and oftentimes don't have the kind of background that you gentlemen sitting here do when it comes to borrowing money or interest rates or all that. So I just wondered if you could, because I know that was one of the issues in the newspaper articles this summer.
Through the chair, Representative Kapsner, I think you're right. I think I've seen studies that show that I've seen studies that suggest that car dealers somehow are able to take advantage of women more easily, and I'm not sure what the dynamic is. But I've seen suggestions. I haven't read any studies, but I've seen references to that in the paper.
And I think one of the things in the paper that it pointed out, if my memory's right, is that more often women would get charged a higher dock fee than men because they're just they're not aware of the detail things and where they can save money. But I don't. I mean, there's no proof of that, but that's one thing that I have heard in through the reports in the paper.
I can comment a little on that. Having bought a car only last year, the dock fee was in very bold print in the contract. And the negotiated price was up here and all the sentences following. And then it just said documentation fee printed in bold letters, $200. And, of course, I challenged that. He says, I can't help it. It's here. It's printed. And I said, well, I don't want to pay it. Go ahead and deduct $200 off the price of the car. And he said, I can't do that. Even if I did, I cannot remove the dock fee. I was under the impression that he truly couldn't. And I think that the gist of this bill is to say, you know what, that was untruthful of the dealer, or at least of the person that the dealer assigned, to tell me that he couldn't do anything about it. And I am forced at that point to say, you know, you're spending $20,000. Somebody says $200, and I can't avoid it. It seems like an authorized government fee. And it sounded that way to me because he said, I can't do anything about it. I believe that's what the bill is really about, is deceit and saying, you know, as long as that practice goes on, maybe we ought to say we need to be a little bit more open and honest to the individual. And so you've talked in the bill about the dock fee, but you've also added the point of the interest. I have a little more trouble with the interest in that it's in a free market. It's not deceitful to say, you know what, I have this interest rate through First National Bank. And it would be up to you to say, is that the best we can do? And you would say, that's the best I can do. And I would like for you to say, right then, it's the best I can do, but I believe if you shopped around, you might be able to find a better rate. And that puts the onus on me. Am I willing to do that, or do I feel like, you know, I like this guy, and I don't think he's trying to cheat me. But at least I made the decision, knowing what you're willing to disclose. And I think that part of it, to say, you might be able to find a lower rate, is reasonable, since we're dealing with another company. So I'm going to shift to Representative Salmon now.
I think Newman had his hand up way before me.
Okay. I'll select Representative Newman then.
Thank you for your courtesy, Representative Salmon. Just a little confused on dock fees. I mean, I don't think I really have a problem of saying that you have to have dock fees, but then Representative Gatto just said that, you know, normally you're there, but they can't get out of them. So I'm not quite clear on that one yet. And I don't know if, I guess this bill just requires to make sure that it says that there's a dock fee in there.
No, the bill says that the price should include whatever portions of, the price should be the price that you're charging.
Bottom. You should be able to say. Excuse me, through the chair.
Go ahead. Yeah, continue.
The bottom line. When you should be able to say, okay, here's your full cost right here when you sign the contract.
Yeah. The big numbers they put in the newspaper, the big number they put on the contract, the big number they write on that little piece of paper when they're doing that little paper handing thing to you that they do at car dealers. That number that they're saying that they're going to charge you for the car, it should be the number that they charge you for the car. And because there's this additional problem that Representative Gatto said, which is people don't know what that dock fee is. They think it might be a government fee. They think it's non-negotiable. And both of those things are false. You know what? I mean, what's going on is the studies show that you want to sell a car, that people who sell anything want to end the price in $99. And if you sell a car for $59.99, you're more likely to get a sale than if you say it's $6,000. So they want to sell a car for $6,200, but they don't want to tell you that because it might deter you from buying it. They want to say $59.99. Well, if you want to say $59.99, then charge $59.99.
Quick follow-up there.
Go ahead.
I kind of got off where we're going on it. Is, you know, I don't think I have a problem with the dock fee thing, but you know, and saying this is the price in the bottom, but you had said that I'm pretty troubled about the interest thing, to where you stated that you're not supportive in government telling what a business can charge. But I think that you said that you want to, if a car dealer can get interest at 4%, and they tell you that, you know, they will give it to you at 5%, is this bill trying to say that you should be, say, the car dealer should say, well, I can give it to you at 5%, but I can get it at 4% because I do a lot of volume and have a better credit rating? Or
it wouldn't require you to.
Are they supposed to give it to you at 4%?
Through the chair, no, it's not doing either of those. It's we're not telling them what they can charge. They can charge whatever they can negotiate with you. That's fair. We're telling them that if they're keeping a cut and indicating to you that that First National Bank is offering a 6% loan when in reality First National Bank is only charging 5%, we're saying you should tell the consumer that you're getting a cut. It might be difficult to figure out what that cut is, so we're not saying you have to say how much the cut is, but we're saying if you're keeping a cut, you should tell the consumer you're getting a cut, and that way the consumer knows, you know, there's more room in there to negotiate. See, the other thing that's going on is car dealers know, and they will all tell you, they want to keep you on the lot and sell you the car while you're on the lot. They don't want you to leave and start shopping around because you might not come back. If you give them full information and say, I'm getting a cut on this loan, their fear is you're going to start shopping around and you might not come back. That's not really my concern at all as a legislator. My concern is to let the consumer do what the consumer would do if they were armed with full information.
Representative Elkins?
This got a little bit tongue-in-cheek, but what if you had negotiated a price and you wanted to go shopping around and I gave you a gallon of ice cream in August, would you shop around or would you go home and put that ice cream in the freezer? And then I could follow you home and follow up on our talk.
What kind of ice cream?
Representative Salmon had a question. Oh, continuing.
That's actually a trick that I've seen used in big areas where they have car rows, you know, the dealers.
Yeah, well, banks used to offer you a toaster and a no-interest rate savings account, too.
Representative Salmon?
Yes, the question I had is, let me just start off by saying that the way I shop is almost like Bill, you know. I kind of go backwards, you know. I go to the bank, ask them what the interest rate is and how much, you know, what area would it be good to buy your vehicle and how much interest it'll be, you know. And they tell me right off the bat what it is, you know. So when I go to the lot, I know what price range I'm looking at. But on the other hand, when you go to the dealer, if you just go to the dealer and you ask them, what's the chance of, you know, getting this car and what, you know, interest rate you charge and stuff like that, and they'll tell you, well, it depends on your credit rating. And to me, I never did understand credit rating. I mean, if they give you some kind of a rating, I mean, whether you get the credit or not, I mean, why move the interest up if your credit rating is high, you know? But, you know, that's their category. But the point is that there's too many hidden costs, you know. If we, as a consumer, especially when we're in charge of our own finances, you know, then we should be told what it is, you know. I don't want to pay 2 years after, you know, after I'm supposed to be, like if they say I'm supposed to pay 5 years, then I end up paying, you know, 5.5 years. I mean, somebody's not being truthful. So okay. It's the truth that I think we're looking at. And especially the car dealership, I mean, they're pretty shifty from my, you know, point of view, you know, because I'm very conscious about money, you know. And, you know, how, especially if you're in a city and you're alone, you know, I don't have a grandfather that's rich or anything like that, or, you know, I don't have an inheritance that's, you know, that could, you know, take care of if I, you know, ruin this one. So we need to be truthful, you know, to one another, you know. So we're truthful in saying we're going to pay that much. Well, we should pay that much. And I think this bill indicates that. I think they ought to put the credit rating on there too. I mean, as, you know, as an amendment, we should look into that part. You know, I don't understand where, you know, your credit. I mean, I deal with one bank in the state, and that's the only one I could really get a loan from, because the rest of them, I don't have a record at that bank, so my credit rating is sky high over here, but right here, you know, they'll give me a loan any day, you know. So, I mean.
Okay. I think this is a good time to open it up to the other side of the aisle, the people who actually sell the cars. So online we have Jim Arpino representing Affordable Used Cars. Jim, are you there?
I am here.
Okay, this is your opportunity to testify.
I'd just like to thank everybody for giving us a chance here. Affordable Used Cars, we're in Fairbanks and Anchorage. I'm also a member of the Alaska Dealers Association on the board. The information so far that you guys have in front of you that you're hearing, it's not the whole story, or in fact a lot of the information that you guys are getting is spotty. The people that come in now, there's car sales have been around forever and ever. Anything that we're talking about today has been talked about many times over and over and before us now. But the main thing is the consumers nowadays are more educated than they've ever been with internet. There's a zillion books out there, cars.com, where people are informed on how to buy cars. In fact, just in listening to the conversation that you guys have been having there, I can actually say that a lot of the consumers that we deal with at our dealerships are actually more informed than you guys are. When it comes to interest rates, documentation fees, negotiations, very well informed right now. Of course, Mr. Sniffen has always done a good job keeping all of us guys in line. We really haven't had any problems. This particular bill is disturbing to me mainly because it singles out used car dealers. Dock fees are charged on new cars, boats, snow machines, RVs, mortgage loans, and in all of those businesses, there's agreements between banks and dealers to where certain proceeds are kept for doing the paperwork. This particular bill is definitely just singling out used vehicle dealers. And there's a number of other dealers on the line that I just go ahead and give them a chance to talk also. That's pretty much my standpoint as of right now. Does anybody have any questions for me?
Representative Elkins has a question for you.
Yeah, the interest you charge today, is it simple?
Oh, yeah, most definitely. The loans that you were talking about, I can't say. I've been doing it 13 years now, and I've heard of those older type of loans. I believe they're called Rule of 78 loans. Haven't seen anything like that ever. Everything's simple interest.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Salmon has another question for you.
Okay.
Yes, the question I have is, could you explain the credit rating?
You know, that when a person comes in and gets their credit rating, really that question would be better off answered by somebody in the credit business. You know, if you went to a place and had them pull your credit report, they would be able to explain everything about your credit rating a lot better than I would.
Okay.
Wait, I have a question. Did you say that all dealerships use dock fees or dealer reserve fees?
Well, as far as all,
or many
dealerships don't have documentation fees, but when I'm talking about dealers, I'm broadening it out to motorhome dealers, snow machine dealers. I just bought a snow machine here a couple months ago, and I paid a documentation fee. Didn't have any problem paying it. They provided good service to me. It was explained to me, and it was never told that it was a government fee or anything. But I understand what a documentation fee is, so I paid it. But there's a lot more here than just these used car dealers. If you take on this, then you're gonna have to take on a broader market base of businesses that operate in the exact same fashion.
Okay.
One is which, I mean, everybody who's bought a house you pay a loan origination fee, or in some cases they call them documentation fees, and they're not mentioned in the bill. That's just one of many that I could go into.
Thanks. Representative Salmon had a follow-up question for you.
Okay.
I think he just answered it. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. And I'm a little curious. How much was the fee for, you said you bought a snow machine?
I bought a snow machine from a local Fairbanks dealership that's been around for, you know, 50 years.
All right, how much was the dock fee?
That particular one was $99.
Well, that's pretty substantial. Thank you. I appreciate the information. Representative Newman has a question.
Thank you, Chair Gatto. Jim, on line 8, where it says, in addition to advertised negotiated price, you know, that would be added in there, where fees need to be added into there. When you normally do a car deal and you say, well, I can get you 5% interest and here's what the car will cost. I know when I've bought cars in the past, they generally say that this would be your monthly payment. Is that normally what you do?
Well, no. No, you... Everything... you got to go over the price of the vehicle and all the fees, and if they buy an extended service contract or if they want an auto start put in their vehicles, which are real popular now, you know, all that's... Then you have an end number, which is the amount financed, and then you have the interest rate, and then you go over the payment, and then if everything's acceptable... It's, but, you know, another thing that was mentioned, that this is all handled by salespeople. This isn't. This actually takes place in the finance department, which is handled by finance people, not salespeople, who are very knowledgeable in this business. And then afterwards, you know, the last thing really that comes out is the payment. And then if everything's acceptable to the buyer and the seller, and just like in any business, it has to be a win-win, because otherwise they're not going to buy it. They sign up on the dotted line and they leave 99.99% happy customers. And you have a few here and there, but most people, when they buy their vehicle or snow machine or house, they're happy. And if they're not, they call Ed. I don't see where any more legislation is going to really help the consumer in the long run. Or in the short run, for that matter.
Thanks. Representative Newman has another question.
Thank you, Mr. Arpino. So right now, law says that you're required to, I mean, there's a sale price there, and you negotiate the price, and then you go back and you say, okay, here's what the costs are. I think those could change a little bit here and there. I'm not. So you're required to give all full disclosure of every charge that a person pays before you sign a deal, right?
Oh, most definitely. You know, like I said, this sort of stuff has been beaten around and beaten around. Every time a constituent of a legislature has a problem, of course, you know, that person wants to bring it up in law. But there's very good laws in effect now. They've been changed here in 2002. And the laws that we have on the books now are good. They're good for consumers. We can, you know, Ed and everybody at the Department of Law can protect consumers. But consumer also needs to be they need to know how to buy things.
Listen, I appreciate your testimony there.
There's a lot of other dealers online. I'd like to give them a shot.
Exactly. We have at least four people also wanting to testify. So stay online and listen carefully. You might be asked a question to come back. Meanwhile, let's go to John Cook. John, you there?
Yes, I am, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I thank you for the opportunity to talk to you today. I think this is a subject that has certainly received a lot of scrutiny over the years, as Mr. Arpino said, some through past legislation, the dock fee, and some that are receiving, you know, kind of current press, which are finance charges and dealer reserves. I have a copy of the CS here in front of me, and I guess I'll go into some of the issues or concerns I'd raise with regard to the committee substitute. as it sits right now. The first that Jim pointed out is that this bill does target the car industry only, and there are a variety of other institutions and businesses that charge a dock fee. And, you know, I guess that from my standpoint, I don't believe it's, you know, equitable and doesn't represent a level playing field with regard to businesses that do charge a dock fee. The second point that was brought up is that we are already regulated with regard to dock fees. If you pull out a copy of the Anchorage Daily News on Friday or Saturday and you look at the car prices that are in there, that price must include the vehicle price, any accessories that are on that vehicle, any dock fees, all items, period, with the exception of the licensing fees that are imposed by the state. So, you know, we are, you pull that out, I don't care if it's on TV, radio, used car, new car, those dock fees better be included in that price or you're going to get a call from Mr. Sniffen. I can promise you that. So, you know, in my mind, this is a matter that's already regulated and receives a great deal of scrutiny from the Attorney General's office. You know, with regard to the finance charges, the concerns there that the bill is that the bill is, again, it's only looking at used car dealers with regard to this disclosure statement. I guess I'd like to add an aside that while not required right now, there are many dealerships in this state that are providing a disclosure recommended by the National Automobile Dealers Association along the lines contained in this bill, and we're doing so voluntarily. But nonetheless, you know, the fact that, again, we're only looking at used car dealers, there are many other businesses that charge, that receive dealer reserve or dealer participation. Again, snow machine dealers, RV dealers, furniture stores, electronics stores, a lot of these people will arrange financing for you, and this bill does not require them to provide, you know, a similar disclosure. And Representative Gatto's example of the you know, the bottle of milk, I mean, I can look at a mortgage in a house and say, well, if I went down to the bank, did they disclose the fact that they can borrow money at Fed funds rate, so that's 4.5%, but they're charging me, you know, 7% for my house. That's just, it's not something that's done right now. So, you know, again, looking at it from an equitable standpoint, that's certainly a far larger transaction than the purchase of a vehicle. And, you know, if disclosures and legislation, you know, is going to be discussed like this, I think it needs to address all of the industries that may receive, you know, dealer reserve and not just, you know, the used car industry. So those are some concerns that I guess, that I have with this bill. Again, going to Representative Gatto's example of the dock fee, you know, that's just plainly false. Anybody that represents that a dock fee is a mandatory charge or a government charge or is non-negotiable, you know, that is definitely, you know, that is definitely a violation of current law, and it's not the case. But, you know, we're under a pretty high degree of scrutiny, you know, from the Attorney General's office, and we're also in a very, very competitive marketplace. If you're going to go out and, you know, try to mark all these prices up and charge you serious prices and high dock fees, most consumers do not have a problem walking down the street and going to, you know, another dealership. I think they are going to go out and shop, you know, for the best deal that they can get. So, you know, there are some of these things that are out there, I think, that just, you know, they pose more questions, you know, pose more questions than answers when I look at the committee substitute. You know, I guess the last thing is that, you know, we do live in a very small state, and looking at, you know, car dealerships in particular, you know, most are family-run businesses that have been around for a long time. And, you know, the consumers, you know, you cannot operate, I guess, in a manner that's, you know, unethical or not fair to consumers, you just won't be around very long. I mean, it's just, it's bad business and it doesn't make much sense. You know, we've got a good, strong dealers association that tries to promote, you know, we definitely promote high ethical standards and high, you know, the highest degrees of conduct. And I think we've got a very good industry, but, you know, there are a lot of these other industries that do these same practices. And I think if you're going to look at the car industry, you need to look at some of them as well. I guess I'd add, I forgot to say when I called in that I'm the general manager of Aurora Motors and I'm the legislative director of the Alaska Automobile Dealers Association. So at this point, I guess I'd open myself up to any questions that you guys may have.
Mr. Cook, I have a comment rather than a question. When you mentioned that my statement about my experience was false...
Hold on.
No, don't interrupt me. I'm going to finish this statement, and I don't want you to interrupt me.
Sorry.
You said it, and I looked around at the committee here, and there was some aghast looks at the people here. That's what you said. And I'm going to tell you, I'm pretty offended by that statement.
Maybe you misunderstood me, or I must have
misunderstood. No, hold on,
I mean,
Mr. Cook.
It's false that you had that experience. What I was saying is if that individual told you that that was a mandatory charge, that is false. Not that you didn't have that experience, but if somebody told you that that's a non-negotiable item, then that is wrong. That's incorrect of them to say that. It certainly is a negotiable item, and they should not have said that. I mean, that's just clearly a false statement from whoever at that dealership said it.
Well, that's good. I'm glad to hear you say that because...
Absolutely. No, your experience made me gasp.
Okay.
Because I can't believe that anybody would say that to you.
Because sometime after this session is over, I'm going to pick up my paperwork and march right back to that dealer with the information at hand, including the statutes, and see if I can't recover some of this money that apparently was illegally charged. So I'm going to deal with that. Let me take an opportunity here... Ed Sniffen, you on the line?
Yes, I am, Representative. Thank you.
I'd appreciate if you would just give us some comments about what you've heard so far. There are a few more people that will be testifying, but I'd like to get the clarity that you can offer at this point.
Thank you very much. Through the chair, my name is Ed Sniffen. I'm an assistant attorney general here at the Department of Law in Anchorage, and I am responsible for enforcing our consumer protection and antitrust laws. And I'm one of the authors of the statute that is being amended today. And I have some experience with the language that's in the statute and hope I can answer some of the questions I've heard so far. My first comment, I think, needs to address some statements by several representatives that you may know your best interest rate your bank will give you before you go to a car dealership, and you may be armed with all kinds of great information when you go negotiate a deal, and that's terrific. But I can tell you this statute is not aimed at protecting folks like you. I wish everybody would do that before they bought a car. My job would be a lot easier. But it's aimed at, I think, protecting the consumers who don't have that information. And whether they should or shouldn't, I don't know. But we get a number of complaints in our office from uneducated consumers who just don't understand as much about these car deals as perhaps the rest of us do. So it's not necessarily that... the holdback portion of this bill is something we shouldn't consider. It's certainly something that would protect some more uneducated consumers. And the process of negotiating an automobile sale is really a unique creature. It's one of the few transactions that we still do in this country where you can go in and negotiate a price for a product. You don't negotiate the price for the milk on your grocery store shelf. You don't negotiate the price for ice cream in August. And you don't pay, you know, $30,000 to $40,000 to $50,000 for a carton of milk. I mean, these are big deals. It's normally the second largest purchase anyone will make in their entire life. And the process is intimidating. So, you know, when a consumer goes into a dealership and they start negotiating a price and you say, hey, can you finance me? The dealer says, well, let me get your Social Security number and sign this piece of paper that authorizes me to run a credit check. And they go back into some room and they come back and say, well, you know, this is good news. I can finance you for this much money. It doesn't matter really if they say, I can finance you for this much money, or the bank can finance you for this much money. I think the overall perception to the consumer is they ran my credit report and this is what I'm going to get. You know, whether that's right or wrong, I think that's a common perception. So the process is set up in such a way that I think a lot of dealers don't intentionally do this, but as a result of the process, consumers believe that the rate they are being charged is the actual rate that the dealer is going to pay, and they don't understand that there is a holdback. And if that information, you know, is disclosed, it does give the consumer more ammunition to negotiate, so to speak. If it's not disclosed, then I'm hoping that it's the case where the consumer found out the best they could do with their bank was 9%, and the dealers are giving them 6%, and they just don't care, you know, if the dealer's keeping a couple of percentage points. But I don't think that's a typical situation. This and Jim Arpino and John Cook are both reputable dealers here in town. I've had good experiences with both of them, and I appreciate your comments. One of the things both of them said was, you know, if we're going to do this in the car industry, why don't we reach out to all these other industries that also have these kinds of finance charge or document fees? Well, other industries are regulated in different ways. Mortgage rates are regulated federally and under state statute. You have a three-day right of rescission if you don't like the deal that you get on your house. The kinds of fees they charge for the services they perform are different than, like, the doc prep fees in this case. And it's just very difficult to compare other industries who charge these kinds of fees with the automobile industry and how they charge these kinds of fees. And the auto industry is fairly unique in the sense that they have these deals, or not necessarily deals, but they have understandings with perhaps credit unions or banks on ranges of interest rates they can charge or get from the bank, and then the dealer's free to really charge the consumer whatever they want. And I don't know that that exists in mortgages. I don't know if it exists in electronic sales, or if you know, you go down to buy furniture. I think a lot of those financing deals are done in-house, and there isn't that kind of flexibility. But I could be wrong there. But it's not a really fair comparison to say because they don't do it there, we shouldn't do it here. I think in this particular industry, just this whole negotiation process is so unique that it would provide some useful information to consumers. And I hope Mr. Arpino answered a question about simple versus discount interest rates. The Truth in Lending Act, which is a federal statute, requires disclosures of all kinds of information related to financing. And the Truth in Lending Act deals in terms of a finance charge as opposed to interest. And those finance charges are required to be reported in a specific way. And I don't know that it really matters under this bill whether it's simple interest, if it's discount interest, if it's complex interest, if it's prime plus something. What matters is that the dealer is holding back something and making a profit on the finance charge. And I think that's what Representative Guerra is sort of aimed at trying to disclose to consumers. Someone else also made a comment about there being a fiduciary relationship between the dealer and the customer. There is no fiduciary relationship between car dealers and customers. You know, that's a legal term of art that really applies in different circumstances. I can tell you that car dealers want to sell cars and they want to make as much profit as they can. And I think most of the dealers in Alaska try to be as honest as they can about that. But if they can squeak a little more money out of you, you know, in a fair way, I don't think they're opposed to doing that. So I don't know that we can really rely on car dealers to look out for the best interests of consumers in all cases, because they have a profit motive there. And finally, the last thing I want to say is, even if we do understand that, you know, dealers might be telling consumers something truthful about holdbacks on interest rates, if they do, that's great. If they engage in a conversation with the consumer that makes it a little deceptive to make it seem like this is a bank rate when it's really not, however you come out on that issue, it's just a very, very difficult issue for our office to enforce, because you're left with testimony from the consumer that says, he told me this. And then I can tell you the dealer will come to my office with five salespeople that say, no, I would never say that. And so if you go to a court of law, you're going to lose that argument. It's really something that you can't enforce unless it's in writing somewhere. And if you require it to be disclosed in writing, of course, then at least we have something, if that's something the committee would like to do. On the doc fee issue, just for a second, I think Representative Guerra laid that out very well. It is an item of overhead. It's explained to consumers in such a way that it seems like it might be a government-mandated charge when, in fact, it's not. I know some dealers don't do that. The dealers, of course, we really target with all of these laws are the dealers who are a little less than forthright with what these fees mean. So when I drafted this language in the statute in 2002, the intent was to have the doc fee included in the advertised price of the car. And as Mr. Arpino said, I think all the advertisements are doing that, and dealers do comply with that. But then as soon as you get into the dealership and you start negotiating a price and you come off an advertised price, sometimes the fees are added back in. And it was never our intent to have that be the case. So I think changing that would fix that sort of loophole, as Mr. Guerra explains.
Okay.
I will end there, and I'm happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
I have one for you. In the title of the bill, line 3, it refers to the word used motor vehicles. And nowhere else in the bill, everything else in the bill seems to apply to motor vehicles. What is the effect of having it, the word used in the title? Does that restrict the bill to simply used, or would it also apply to any?
Through the chair, that's a very good point, and it would apply to the sale of used motor vehicles, the way I read this only, and frankly, I don't understand the reason for that. I think that was a good comment that Mr. Cook and Mr. Arpino made, that if we're going to do this, there's no reason to not include all motor vehicle dealers except and single out the used motor vehicle dealers.
Thanks. I think we're probably going to amend it, to amend the title to delete the word used and just have it apply to motor vehicle purchases. And I really want to thank you for staying, and I'm going to ask you to stay online. We've got 3 more people that want to testify, and we've got 20 minutes here before I have to be at the next committee. So I'm going to ask Martin Martinson, Alaska Auto Dealers, if you have some new information, keep it as brief as you can, especially if we can get some new information. Martin?
I believe he dropped offline.
Okay, Martin has dropped offline. Carol Lieberger? Carol, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay, Carol, thanks for staying online this long. Could you give us your affiliation?
I'm Carol Lieberger with Lieberger's Car and Truck Sales in Anchorage, Alaska.
Okay, go ahead with your testimony.
And thank you for allowing me to testify. This is great concern. It car dealers, our industry, the auto industry, is very well regulated. We're regulated by the federal and by the state. And I think some of the things that are covered here there that were mentioned during your committee hearing about some of the dealers that do this and do that, I think there are state laws that do regulate them, and if they're caught by the consumer, then that is already there. As far as dealer reserve here, Wells Fargo's contract, which does a lot of business with auto dealers here in this state, their contract states on there, and most contracts do, GMAC's contract states, on the contract itself, the seller may assign this contract and retain its right to receive a part of the finance charge. That is on a Wells Fargo's contract that dealer provides to the consumer when they sign up through Wells Fargo. GMAC does the same. Alaska USA is changing their contract to state those words, and Denali Alaskan Federal Credit Union is also changing their contract. So I think the dealer reserve portion will be, as far as the state of Alaska goes, it's in the contract with the lenders.
So I'm going to interrupt you for a second. You feel then that this would be redundant?
Yes, sir.
Would it negatively affect your ability to sell cars?
With what it states on that? No.
Okay. Because I believe the bill asked on a separate sheet of paper that this information be given to the purchaser. In fact, I'm not sure, but my understanding is in the purchase of a new vehicle, there is a substantial stack of papers, many of which need a signature.
Correct.
In your observation, do readers finally decide, hey, we've bought the car, this is the interest rate, and just go and sign every place there's a circle without reading?
I think when it gets down to the finance department, most dealers who are legitimate have very good finance people who explains to them that's the reason these people are trained and they have been schooled because of all the regulations, how to tell the people about the amount financed, the finance charge. They go over that. And this is where the consumer, I think, basically pays a lot of attention, because that contract is your final. That is your final. You go over the prices with that, and if it doesn't, you know what I'm saying, you pay attention to that. Because if you were told one thing and now you're signing this and this is your contract, you're going to pay attention to it.
Well,
and most consumers pays attention to that contract.
The car salesman could probably have said, listen, after a $2,000 down, this will only cost you $300 a month over 3 years.
Correct.
And then you might go to the finance department, and they might say, listen, I can get that payment down. And you know, you're going to bite at this and
correct.
Say, oh,
the salesperson,
well, yeah, how far down? And they'll say, I can get this for you for $275, but it won't be a 3 years, it'll be 4 years. Now the consumer is probably thinking, gee, is that better or worse? I mean, well, unless they have a calculator and a math degree, I don't think they're going to be able to know.
Well, the salesperson does not talk financing. They do not have the knowledge, and they don't even know themselves. The salesperson knows the product, which is the car, the vehicle. That is their job, is the vehicle. As far as doing anything as far as financing, that salesperson knows nothing. So, at least my first people do not.
So when they come back with a hard offer of exactly $24,900, and they know you want to finance it, they really don't relay any information about finance charges or dock fees or anything. They just give you that hard number. Is that correct?
Our vehicles here have the price on the vehicles. So basically what the salesman's job is to do is to find the customer the vehicle they wished to have. Then they come in and just write up the vehicle, because we have to verify the miles, the VIN, mm-hmm.
Right.
the model, the price. So that is the salesman's job, to verify that. Then they talk to a sales manager, and the sales manager, you know, by then the sales manager says, you know, they got the vehicle here, and usually the customer states of what they wish to do. There's a lot of times the customer says, this is what I wish to do.
Are you saying in your dealership, at least, there's no negotiating, that the price on the car is the price?
Oh, they've always negotiated. But our prices on those cars are the price that we wish to have, yes.
Sure.
We don't, there's nobody, and there is no dealership that goes beyond the price that is on their vehicle.
Okay.
They never raise the price up. If they do, they are breaking the law. And there are laws against that.
Wow. I was under the assumption that for high-demand vehicles in short supply, that people have stated that they had to pay $4,000 or $5,000 above the MSRP in order to get the car. Would that be illegal?
If the price on that vehicle is $4,000 or $5,000 above the MSRP, that's the asking price, and they have to.
Okay.
You understand where I'm coming from?
Yes, I do. Thank you very much.
If that is disclosed to them on the vehicle, that's what they sell it for.
Okay.
There are disclosure laws.
Thank you. I'm sorry, Representative Elkins has a question for you, Carol.
Okay, sir.
Well, you know, I'm sure not every car dealer in the state is large enough to have a finance department. So in some cases, the salesman would have to talk the...
Tell you the truth, I don't know, but I have every dealership that I've been around, and it's been a lot of years, they all have a finance department.
Well, I don't know. Where I bought my last car, they didn't have a finance. They only had two salesmen, too.
Is that right?
Okay.
And no closers.
Thanks, Carol. We have one more person and not many minutes, so I'm going to ask if Carolyn Allen, are you there?
Yes.
Carolyn Allen, are you there?
This is Carol Leiberger.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. Thanks, Carol. Now we're up to Carolyn.
Yes. My name's Caroline Allen. I'm a business development director at Auto Service Company in Fairbanks. I'm calling. I don't want to take up any of your time. I know you're running out of it. Our concerns are the same as the previous car dealers that have spoken, and that's pretty much all I want to take up, all the time I want to take of you.
Carolyn, please add one comment on your own.
Singling out used cars before, I understand you plan to amend that to make it so that all automobiles
mm-hmm.
would be subject?
Right.
Okay. Seeing as how here at Auto Service Company we sell both new and used cars, I would oppose to that amendment as well.
Okay.
As for us, with regard to the documentation fees, we don't have those, so that's not a particular concern of us on this bill. It's more with the finance charge disclosures.
Thanks very much, Carolyn. Ed Sniffen, are you there?
Yes, I am. Thank you.
Just curious, The word motor vehicle, do you think we need to do something with that? Because, you know, we can go all the way down to my lawnmower, certainly up to motorcycle, snow machines, four-wheelers, three-wheelers.
So we don't need to do anything with motor vehicle. Motor vehicle is defined in the bill to include specific vehicles that are required to be registered with the Department of Motor Vehicles in Alaska, and it excludes some other types of vehicles. If we want to address other vehicles, we'll probably have to work with other statutes to do that.
Okay, and I really needed some clarity on that, so I appreciate it.
Yes, no problem. Thank you.
Representative Newman?
I just have to ask this. You said that other vehicles were listed in here, but snowmobiles and four-wheelers, I know snowmobiles, at least anyhow, are required to be registered with Department of Motor Vehicles.
Yes, through the chair, Ed Sniffen here again. I don't have a copy of the statute that defines exactly what a motor vehicle includes and doesn't include, but I know there are certain lawn tractors, for example, and other things that are not included in this section of the statute. But whatever motor vehicle is included is what this statute would affect. And I'd have to look at that definition to see what that is. But I think we want to stay with the term motor vehicle, though, because that term is already defined. And if you wanted to change it to include other vehicles, we would have to modify other sections of the statute to make that clear. And it may implicate other statutes as well if we do that.
Ed, this is Representative Gatto. What if we made a statement that said motor vehicles primarily for use on the highways of the state? Would that then restrict it to the motor vehicles that really we intend to deal with, or would snow machines be also restricted to the highways of the state?
Chairman Gatto, I believe that the definition of motor vehicle as it exists in the statute addresses that issue, and I'm happy to take a look at that and give you a better answer. But if we change anything with the word motor vehicle in either the title of the bill or other places in the bill, it is going to affect how that word is defined. And it's not impossible to do, certainly, but we would have to look at how that would affect the vehicles that are required to be licensed by the Department of Motor Vehicles, which I believe includes primarily cars and trucks and motorhomes. And I'm drawing a blank on the snow machine or ATV issue because I'm not sure if this bill applies to those sellers.
Okay, I appreciate that. We are running right down the end of the clock. Representative Salmon has a question.
Yeah, on that, the line three on first page, instead of we should just keep the use in and just add new to the, that'll get both of them.
Actually, if we delete the word used.
No, leave it in there and just add new, and new.
New or used?
It'll be used and new. Or
Ed, new Ed, is there some advantage to adding the word new and or just deleting the word used and simply having it apply to motor vehicles?
Yes, Chairman Gatto, I believe the better approach would be just to delete the term used since motor vehicle is defined to include both new and used motor vehicles already in other places in the statute.
Okay. Anyone else have a question? Somebody want to make an amendment to delete the word used from page 1, line 3? Representative Salmon?
There's a lot of used in here in this bill that we need to delete, too.
Well, where else does it appear?
It's let me see, I just saw one here.
Oh, there it is on page 2, line 24.
Yeah, there's
the word used reappears. So we could maybe make a conceptual amendment to delete the word used. Ed, would that be the best course of action?
Chairman Gatto, I believe that is. And I think on page 2, line 24, and in the title of the bill, those are the only places that makes a difference.
I see. So, Representative Salmon, would you like to amend your amendment to include the word used also on line 24, line 3?
Yes, I do.
Okay, so we any objections to the amendment to the amendment? Seeing and hearing none, we have the amendment before us. Is there any objection to the amendment?
Object for purpose of discussion.
Representative Newman, go ahead.
I'd like the maker of the amendment to speak to the amendment.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, I'll defer to Ed Sniffen, please.
Okay. Ed Sniffen, I guess I thought we'd already commented on it, but is there something else you can add?
Chairman Gatto, thank you. No, only that I'm not sure that singling out used car dealers or used motor vehicle dealers, as Mr. Arpino and Mr. Cook commented, makes a lot of sense, simply because new car dealers are faced with these exact same issues, and they all charge dock fees. In some cases, there are reserves. I'm not aware of as many in the new car industry as the used car industry, but I don't understand that there's a real reason for excluding the application of this to new motor vehicles as well as used motor vehicles.
You know, I would agree with you, because sometimes you can buy a brand new motor vehicle that's actually used. And so I don't want to use the term. Rather, I like the idea of simply referring to motor vehicles, and that gets us out of the quagmire of trying to determine, well, darn, this thing had 60 miles on it before I bought it. What does it qualify as? I think I'm right. Am I not?
Chairman Gatto, that's correct.
Okay, so Representative Newman, do you want to withdraw your objection or?
Withdrawn.
Withdrawn. Is there any objection? Seeing and hearing none, then the amendment passes. Just hold on 1 second. Okay, for the record, the Representative Castro, you did make a mention of speaking to the amendment, but I think it was Representative Sama that actually made the amendment.
Different amendments?
Oh, okay. They're different amendments that we're talking about, I think. Representative Salmon had a conceptual amendment, and I have a written amendment.
Okay. So this amendment that then just passed was Representative Salmon's amendment to delete the word used in two places. That amendment is passed. We now have an amendment from Representative Kapsner, which refers, do we all have copies of Representative Kapsner's amendment? I have a copy here. It refers to page 2, lines 23 to 29, delete and make some changes. So we have this amendment for us. I'm going to object to this amendment and believe that the existing language is somewhat better than changing the language here, which is much more specific. Is there anyone else want to speak to this, Representative Kapsner?
This is what I was deferring to Ed Sniffen to talk about. I think it's good to put these provisions back in the bill. I think it makes the bill more clear, and I'd appreciate it if we could amend the bill.
Ed, do you have this amendment from Representative Kapsner in front of you?
Chairman Gatto, no, I do not.
Okay. It simply deletes the material and substitutes the original language, which was probably in the A version,
yes,
would be my guess. Do you have the A version in front of you?
Yes, I do, Chairman Gatto. Thank you.
Okay. She is simply saying, as near as I can tell, since she deleted lines 23 to 29, that Section 3, she's asking to revert back to the A version.
Mr. Chair, that's not correct.
Okay, I apologize. Representative Guerra tells me that's not correct.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to clarify things, Representative Kapsner and I worked on this together. This is language that we worked on with Mr. Sniffen. It's not the language from the original bill. It's
I see.
It's Mr. changed. Sniffen had better language, and so. Ed, it's the language that says page 2, lines 23 to 29, delete all material and insert a new subsection F.
With subparts 1 and 2.
Yes, Chairman Gatto, Representative Guerra, thank you. I do remember that proposal, and for some reason I didn't print that off and put it in my folder here, but I do recall what my intent was in splitting it out, and it wasn't to change the intent of that section as currently written. It was to clarify it and just make it easier to understand. And so if there is some preference for wording, I think the current language in the bill accomplishes what we're after. I think my proposed amendment was simply a way of trying to clean it up and make it easier to follow.
Okay, and I'm going to state my objection, and that is where it says in subsection 1, where the interest rate quoted to the proposed buyer is different than the interest rate charged to the dealer, and Of course, the good part, the interest rate quoted may not be the lowest rate available. But it does specifically say, different than the interest rate charged to the dealer. And I have some concern in trying to understand how it is different than what's in Section 3, as we say.
Mr. Chair, I think I can help.
Okay.
I think you zoned in on it. I think the second part is what the bill that the committee rewrote, the committee substitute, does. So if you adopt Amendment Number 1, the disclosure would also have to, if this is true, advise the consumer if the interest rate quoted to the proposed buyer is different than the interest rate being charged to the dealer. So it would add this additional thing where the dealer would have to disclose if they're taking a cut, whereas the CS doesn't add that part.
Okay. In the CS, then, it says you only need to be advised that the interest rate may be different. In the amendment, it says you have to tell them the interest rate is different.
If it is.
If it is. And I kind of still retain my objection to that. I think it's reasonable in light of just the free market system to give someone the information without telling them what it is. Say, you may shop for a lower rate. And so I'm going to retain my objection.
And Chairman Gatto, if I may.
Go ahead, Ed.
I understand exactly your concern, and I think in my amended language, my intent was to have motor vehicle dealers only be required to disclose the difference if there is a difference. In the current version of the bill, you have to say it regardless. Let's say the dealer actually has given you the actual rate the bank has given you, and they're not taking a commission. If that is the circumstance, then why should they have to disclose anything? And I think the language I proposed to Representative Guerra removes that obligation. So if the dealer is actually just giving you the rate, there is no obligation to disclose. I think the language in the current bill, version S, requires the disclosure even if there is no difference. And that was one of the things that I tried to clarify in my amendment. But you could read the language in version S as well, as because there's that phrase in there on line 26 that says, if applicable.
That's exactly right. I was staring at that, yeah.
Yeah, and if it is applicable, and I think that's why my earlier comment was, I think this language does the job. My proposed language, I thought, just made it clearer. But I'm certainly not wed to one version or the other.
Okay, yeah. And I feel the if applicable really does make the statement as clear as any other statement. And so I'm going to retain my objection. So I guess we need to have a vote. Madam Secretary?
This is a vote to accept
this is
the
a
amendment.
Vote to accept the amendment. Well, I'm not sure. Was this Amendment 1, or since it's Amendment 2 because we took it second? We'll call it Amendment Number 2 then.
Okay. Representative Torrey, absent. Representative Newman?
No.
Representative Thomas?
Not here.
Representative Kapsner?
Yes.
Representative Salmon?
Yes.
Co-Chair Elkins?
Yes.
Co-Chair Gallagher?
No. So I guess that's 3-2. And so the amendment passes, and we now have the amendment. With the amendment in the bill, I think it's probably a good time to move this from committee. So can I have a motion that we move this bill from committee?
Mr. Chairman, I move that we
CS for 383.
CS for 383 amended with attached zero fiscal note.
And recommendations.
Pardon?
Individual recommendations.
With individual recommendations.
Is there an objection? Seeing and hearing none, CS for HB 383 moves from transportation to its next committee of referral. Since this was the only bill we're hearing, this meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much for attending.